1.3 million people just listened to my record and I got paid nothing. Millions of people have bought my albums over the years. I'm the drummer on a theme tune, the Top of the Pops. I've discovered Depeche Mode, Soft Cell. I've signed everybody. I had everything stolen off me. And I want everyone to know the music industry, like Apple, they do not care about music. They care about money.
Okay, welcome to the Stage Left podcast, lifting the veil on the music industry by telling the stories of those with a unique vantage point. This podcast exists to provide free educational content for young musicians entering an increasingly complex industry by telling the stories of some of the unsung heroes behind the success. So if you go to stageleftpodcast.com, all of the episodes are on there, including you've got drummers such as Wolfgang Fuller of Kraftwerk talking about the moment he accidentally created the world's first ever electronic drum set, Clive Deamer of Radiohead, Kieran Pepper the Prodigy, Woody from Madness, Danny Goffey of Supergrass, Tony Visconti on producing David Bowie's final album Black Star, and loads more. Now today's episode's with Rusty Egan, and it was a bit of a mind-blowing interview. I'm kind of sat here afterwards having been hit by this kind of tsunami of a character who, by his own admittance, he's you know, asked me to say this at the beginning, that he didn't make money from the music industry to the level that perhaps he should have done given the recognition of the work that he did. So he kind of was involved in finding a lot of artists, working with, you know, really, really high caliber people. You know, he told me that he, you know, founded Madonna and was, you know, at the early stages of bands like Depeche Mode and like hundreds and hundreds of records that you will know. He's been involved in some way as either a DJ or as a drummer. And he's had a fantastic career, you know. He ran enormously well-known nightclubs in London, and has played with kind of everybody. But it's an interesting interview, and Rusty wanted me to kind of mention this at the beginning, that to give a kind of framework as to why he, you know, or the perspective he was coming from, if you like to work through when you're listening, because it's coming from a place that is unfortunate that he didn't get paid and he wants things to change. And this is his call to arms.
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolute pleasure. Now, the way this podcast came about was that I was speaking to a friend of mine who went recently to one of the shows that you were doing at the Palladium. And you did a lecture, I think, at the beginning.
No, I don't do a lecture. What happened was Midyear and I created a band called Visage, which was a studio band. And the bottom line was, in that band was Billy Curry. And Billy Curry, I convinced to continue Ultravox after John Fox and Robin Simon had left, and said, hey, he sings and plays guitar. Therefore, putting myself out of a job. But we made this album, Visage, and Billy went on tour with Gary Numan, and he met Chris Payne. And Chris Payne said, oh, I've got this idea. Look, it goes, umba, da-pa-da, 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 umba. And he brought it to the studio where we were recording in Martin Rushen's garage. So the bottom line was, Midyear is doing the 1980 Vienna Visage tour. So he said, hey, why don't you join me for a few dates? I said, what am I going to do? He said, well, why don't you DJ the music that you were playing in the Blitz Club, like the Kraftwerk and, you know, First Human League and Eno and Mobius, German electronica. I said, well, I've already given you that and you play it when people are coming into the auditorium. And a lot of people Shazam it and find, you know, Wolfgang Reichman or Mobius, which Midge is very happy because he loves, you know, Rodelius and all them. They all sound like odd names to you, but in Germany, they were all groundbreaking, pioneering ambient music artists and electronic artists that inspired a hell of a lot of people. So I go, yeah, all right, I'll get my folder out. Oh, look, red frame, white light, you know, first OMD record, first Human League record, you know, first Fad Gadget and all this kind of stuff. I thought, yeah, I'll just play it. So anyway, I get to the first gig and it's a sleepy little town, 1,500 people, theatre. And I peer out the curtain and I go into the dressing room and say, Midge, you want me to DJ? He goes, yeah, you know, play all the records, get them in the mood. You know, you're only doing half an hour, you know, can't be that difficult. Play David Bowie, you know what to play. I said, but they're all like 60 years old. They haven't been out, you know, to a nightclub. And I'm a DJ. I actually DJ.
Yeah.
And not just a radio guy. So I said, what about if I play a song and talk about it? So he went, yeah, yeah, just get him in the mood, you know, play the music. So I sort of went out and I said, good evening to the 80% of the audience who don't know who I am. I introduced myself as being the drummer in the Rich Kids with a guy called Midgeur. We toured the country, we got bottles thrown at us, we got spat at, and we looked at each other at the end of the tour and said, forget that. Let's make records and videos and get a singer. Let him do it all. we don't want to be up front. And I said, well, I'm DJing in the Blitz, you know. I want to come and meet Steve, you know. So Midge came down. Well, it's actually Billy's before the Blitz, 3 months before that. So that a long and a answer to your introduction was the fact that I didn't do a lecture, although my hero Ricky Gervais calls it a lecture. I did a comedy act. I literally joked about today's music. Mm. I joked about David Guetta's finger. And I joked about manufactured pop music today and manufactured artists, and talked about how you go and see a band like the Sex Pistols and you go and form a band. Mm. Well, Kraftwerk were that. As soon as you saw Kraftwerk, you went out and bought the cheapest synth in the world, a Wasp or something, and you had two fingers and you could go do 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 do. Oh, OMD. You know. But as a drummer, in between the Rich Kids and Visage, Midge got a phone call to join Phil Lynott in America and be in the Tin Lizzy.
Wow.
And we'd half recorded the Visage album. And I got a phone call to join the Skids in Scotland. And I went up there with my drum machine and my Dave Simmons electronic drum pads triggering. And I was all into drum machines, you know. And I rehearsed, you know, in a garage like you do while the songs were being written. And then Bill Nelson from Bebop Deluxe was a bit of a hero to Stuart Adamson. So we got to go around his house, meet him, and I'm telling him all about German electronic music, motoric drumming. And he's going, oh my God, I love this stuff. And I'm going, how can I incorporate that into a punk band? How can I get this driving beat, you know? So, it would be great. I said, look, I'll put on the drum machine and I'll play along to it. And of course, in those days, bands were like, 1, 2, 3, 4, go. Nobody said, just lay down your drums first. Mm. You did it live. And I was going, no, we lay down the drums and then you play your guitar bit. Oh, I'm not sure about that. You know, what about the feel of the band and all that? And I was like, well, let's just try it, you know. And intro to Working for the Yankee Dollar. You know. And I just sort of laid down these beats. But if you listen to that Days in Europa album, number one, it's got remixed. So there are two versions of that album. Mm. And then number two, in about 2000 or something, a guy, oh, wish I could remember his name now, I'm terrible at this, but basically in SoundCloud, Paul, come on, remember his name? Paul, he basically remixed them.
Mm.
So I've got a little table here. Mm. If you went, that's just 16s, right? 32s. Mm. But if you went, so I got a drum machine. I'm going, come on. And basically got this vibe going. But the remixes, because of you can quantize today to your listeners, means literally like sync, perfect timing.
Mm.
And that...
Which takes the feel out of it a little bit, or...?
Yeah, today. Yeah. So the remixes of the Days in Europa album make my drumming like, oh my God, that's so perfectly in time. But no way is it like that in the original. But here's the clue, right? So I'm a DJ in 1979, and I want you to dance, and I want you to not stop, which is the point of disco, dancing. So I thought, how can I incorporate Studio 54 dance music, Cerrone, Supernature, lyrics by Lena Lovitch. Mm-hmm. What about that? I only found that out recently. So I'm trying to play this I Feel Love, Giorgio Moroder, which is not in time, in case anybody really wants to listen to it.
Because it's been played live, is that why?
And it's didn't have a thing called MIDI.
Yeah. Right.
And they didn't have the SMPTE code, and is this like 1975, 76? And also another one, which is on my new album with Didier Moroni, Space, Magic Flight, which I remade on my new album this year with Didier Moroni, the keyboard player of Space, who's kind of a Jean-Michel Jarre in Russia. He plays stadiums.
Wow.
Yeah. So the rest of the world, they're like, who's Space? Oh, I know that piece of music. But he's, you know, 8-9 albums in Russia. Anyway, so the point was, when I went to Dusseldorf in search of Kraftwerk, not thinking I was going to actually meet them, you know, you wouldn't think, oh, I'm going to go to Manchester and meet Oasis. They don't live there, mate, you know. So I went, walked around this little town, asked a few shops and not record shops, hairdressers, you know, have you ever heard of Kraftwerk? And my joke is, yeah, it's a power station up the road. I go, no, they're a band. Oh, really? No. Eventually, one bloke...
So even people there didn't know Kraftwerk that
Kraftwerk well. Means power station.
But they didn't know... People didn't know of the band Kraftwerk then
in Germany. No, that's for sure.
Wow.
Oh, you say wow. I could... I can't explain it, and I don't want to insult millennials. Yeah. But they don't know 2000 artists. Yeah. They don't know artists from 1999. You know. But every day you do learn something like that. Like, there's a new record out at the moment. It's a lovely song. And I hear a lot of new music. I have a radio show and stuff, and I'm a DJ. So in order to help other artists, I'm quite active at sharing and saying, hey, I like this. Or, you know, I'm very open to doing that. And there's a new record come out, and it had a melody on it. And the melody was White Town.
Oh,
yeah. So whoever White Town was, they claimed, this happens in Millennium World now. Oi, you've nicked my music, because they all nick off each other. Yeah. So they're all nicking. I'm biggest at that. I'm slagging everyone. You all nick my music. I got told today the Peugeot advert has nicked my music. And it happens all the time. Armani nicked my music. So the world is full of people just nicking and steal. You know, they just copy it, steal it. But some of them claim they wrote it, etc. So the White Town story was on Twitter. Oi, you've nicked my melody. And the supposed artist who stole the melody said, no, I used the melody of a song called, and he mentioned the name of the song. Exactly. So I Googled it. It's like 1920. Da, 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 you know, da, 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 like a 1920s thing.
Yeah.
And that's the White Town melody.
Right, yeah.
I didn't know that. I didn't know Lena Lovitch wrote the lyrics on Cerrone. And I've got tracks that I made which have been sampled, like Bomb the Bass. Remember them?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's my drums from Pleasure Boys. Oh. But I actually released a five-track instrumental type EP of the drums because I'd been in New York and I'd seen them all body popping.
Mm.
And then I made Afrika Bambaataa. I made the Time Zone record,
really?
Which is one of the biggest hip-hop records of all time.
Yeah.
So what I like to do there is I like to tweet, hip-hop, born in Germany. I like doing that.
So why Kraftwerk? Why were Kraftwerk so important to you?
Right. Well, I'm a drummer, right? We just heard the whole... Okay. So I'm DJing in a little bar, and I go, well, a little bar is like a romantic coffee bar in France. So I'm going to start with Roxy Music, Brian Ferry, here as I sit in this empty cafe. And it's empty, right? It's like half empty, Tuesday night, Thatcherite Britain, 1979, misery, some Giles from accounts with some girl with a bottle of wine, you know. And I want to get rid of them anyway, you know, and they want to hear the Bee Gees, and I'm like, piss off, you know. So anyway, because I know Boy George is arriving, he's going to be in the cloakroom, Steve's going to arrive with Julia, and then all our friends are going to arrive, all the St. Martin's Art School fashion students, and it's going to kick off, and I'm just going to empty the club. So I put on Kraftwerk, or even Ralph and Florian, you know, on vinyl, of course. And it's like, well, you have to sort of listen to this. You have to, it's not, without interrupting myself, I heard that Brian Eno had an accident and he was in hospital, and one of his friends came in and brought a record player, and they put on a classical album, like Vivaldi or something, because he was unconscious. So between consciousness and waking up, Brian Eno heard something in the distance, sort of beautiful and calming music. And then he heard some outside in the street noises, some doors opening, some people talking. Anyway, so he regained consciousness and got well and carried that thought back into the studio and thought, how can I make music that you don't actually listen to, but you really enjoy having it on? Not like Muzak, which is what we had at the time when you got into an elevator and you had James Last, you know, or some, you know, not quite Top of the Pops cover versions, you know. So he created music for airports. Mm. Well, people chattering, you know. It just is so it ended up being entitled ambient music, you know. And I love that. And Kraftwerk had gone into that arena right in 1971, 72. I didn't know about it then. I didn't know until I heard Autobahn and Popcorn, you know, like all these like novelty records, Doctor Who, you know, what's that sound, you know, a synthesizer. Nobody had really played drum machines because they didn't even exist. Wolfgang Fleur, if I'm not mistaken, made his own drums, you know. I didn't know about any of that. All I knew is I liked it, you know. So anyway, I would put that on, and of course the first album of Jean-Michel Jarre. So I'd just leave the whole album on. And of course, Giles would be, what's happening in this place, this bar? I'm in this bar after work.
Let's leave. Yeah.
And the weird looking DJ bloke, you know, me. Yeah. And I was there really early. I was there like 8:30, 9 o'clock. Because we'd eat, you know. And 9:30, 10 o'clock, start to fill up. 11 o'clock, play Human League. Okay. Are you ready? Oh, listen to the voice of Buddha. And all these weird and wonderful electronic records. If anyone listening now just puts in Russi Egan Blitz Club playlist, you can actually go to my YouTube channel where every now and again I remember, oh, I used to play that, and I put it into my YouTube channel. But of course, with YouTube, it then disappears, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah.
And I'm anti Spotify. You know, I'm a bit of an anti... I was anti-Apple.
Yep.
And I'm anti-Spotify. Why would you be anti-Spotify? Why would you be anti-Apple?
Well, it's pretty obvious. It's not... The artists aren't being paid, are they? And they're taking a cut.
Yeah. So. Well, am I not mistaken? There were about 20, 30, 40, 50, maybe 100 different people made cars. Am I right?
Right.
But it started with Ford.
Yeah.
One bloke.
Yeah.
So there were Ford cars. Okay. And then they got copied by Japanese people. Okay. And they got very good at copying the Japanese. But they got outdone by the Chinese, didn't they? And so on and so forth. Originating music, people who create, the originators that create from zero, nothing, never heard it before, blank piece of paper, oh, I want to write a song, I want to make some music, one finger, two fingers, an orchestra. They all get copied. Everyone gets ripped off.
Mm.
Well, let's take Spotify. Daniel Elk at university, probably 20 years more younger than me, 30 years younger than me. What do you want to do with your life, Daniel Elk? Well, I want to create a platform where everybody's records can be listened to by anybody and they all pay me. Well, how can you do that? Because you don't own any of the records, do you? No, but the record companies are so stupid, they don't understand what they've got. They own the copyright. Right, so what I'll do is I'll give them the lion's share. I mean, even if I get 20%, I'm going to make so much money, it's ridiculous. So, okay, let me get this straight. Universal Music Group have got 70 years of music, and they've just bought EMI, and they've just bought Island Records, so they've got Bob Marley, they've got the Beatles, they've got everything, and they don't know how to let anybody listen to them. No. They don't understand how to set up an engine and a platform and market it. They don't understand all that.
Mm.
Right, but you do. Okay, right. So the music, well, in 1963, the Beatles were really stupid. No, they weren't stupid. They were represented by lawyers who didn't understand the music industry, and the music industry didn't understand the music industry. They were still selling sheet music. The dots, they called it. You went into a shop and you bought the how to play it at home on a piano. But somebody brought in a record, a recording, right? Well, you could play that as many times as you liked in your own house. Anyway, the bottom line without boring everybody is the record company and Daniel Elk worked out that the contracts meant that the artists had already sold their rights. We can give them nothing. We don't have to pay them anything. All right, but you've got to give them something. I mean, it's the Beatles, for God's sake. All right, but, you know, we only gave them, like, £500 in 1964, and we've been selling that album for the last 30 bloody years, and they haven't been able to do anything about it because they signed an agreement.
Mm.
So the bottom line is, we're in 2020, and I hope some people listen to this in 2025 when Spotify is gone, when Apple iTunes is gone, when it doesn't matter that you've got a Mac or an iPhone, it doesn't matter what your hardware is. All that matters is the content is king again. How did that happen? Well, it happened with something called blockchain. What's that? Oh, it's a new platform that came along around 2015, but it wasn't regulated. What does regulated mean? It meant the government need to allow you to actually do it. And they only do that once they get their cut, which means VAT. How are they going to do that? Well, they set it up in such a way where you monetize it, and when you monetize it, they get paid. How do you monetize it? Well, you've got to go through a crypto digital currency, and that has to be decentralized. And I could bore the hell out of everybody. The bottom line is this. You on your Mac at home could make a recording. You own that recording, but as soon as you put it on SoundCloud, you've given it to the world, and the world can steal it, which is what they're doing right now. And then you're listening to the radio and you go, oh, that sounds like my piece of music. Well, bully for you. You didn't register it and you didn't protect it, called copyright control and a PRS. So you should have done that. Oh, I don't know how to do that. Well, don't worry, because in the new way, all you do is drag your file and drop it and add the information, just like you do on any website when you log in and give it information. Who played on it? Who performed on it? Who wrote it? All that information goes in. That information is in the chain, the blockchain. chain. And everyone in that chain wakes up and they get a little thing on their desktop and it goes, you were played 1,000 times in China yesterday. And under the terms of the agreement, this is the money and it's waiting for you in your digital wallet in cryptocurrency.
So there is hope. There is hope of things changing, do you think?
It's more than hope. It's a revolution. Now, I don't know if your readers are anarchists, your listeners are people that like say, I don't believe the news. This is all hype. This is crap. That's not true. You know, why did this government do what it done? Are you sure the whole country actually voted for Brexit? And so on and so forth. So let's put it like this. If you're Apple and you lost Steve Jobs and Google have nicked any other possible Steve Jobs and Stanford University in California that produces every other potential Elon Musk who only attended for 2 days, they all got in their heads, I'm going to be, you know, the next Elon Musk. So they all have high aspirations and they've all been told at university, don't go and work for Google, you know, do it yourself. You can do it. As a matter of fact, this is how to raise the money and start up. So they've all learnt it all. So Apple have just stockpiled cash. They have the biggest mountain of money and no genius. And they've got an iPhone and a MacBook and an iPad. And they just keep regurgitating that. And then they do criminal activity like make your phone not work and make your laptop slow down. So you might buy a new one because they can't come up with anything because they are thieves.
So the charger for a Mac has 1,000 charges and then it stops working.
Yeah.
So you have to buy a new one, yeah.
And it has to be a certain one.
Yeah.
So yeah, Apple are thieves. And anybody who is a big fan of Apple, we're only a fan of Steve Jobs. They weren't a fan of Apple. So they've got this pile of cash. Now, if you look up something called ujomusic.com, half a dozen of these clever people created exactly what I just talked about, ujomusic.com. And Uju Music was exactly that. It was a platform for you to upload your music, to own it, to put it into a blockchain, get it in a crypto wallet and sell it. Of course, the last bit you can't do, sell it. You can't, nobody knows. So basically you're one of a million records on a platform. Yeah. Okay. So, but if you do what we're doing right now and go on the radio, blah, 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 and do a look, you might be able to sell some. But don't forget, you're getting 85% of the return now. You're not getting 0.00000. You know, you're actually making money. So there's something called Bandcamp. Yeah. And I sell on Bandcamp and I build my profile on Bandcamp and it goes straight into my PayPal. Thank you, Elon Musk, for creating that. Mm. So anyway, the point is Apple and all of these rich people like Universal Music Group, Sir Lucian Grange, they buy out any clever fuckers and shut them down. Did you hear what I just said? They stop productivity and creativity. They hold up the process. They stop you, the consumer, actually saying, oh, look, I could do that. No, you can't. Out of business. Mm. We bought it. So what? They bought, paid $1 million, $2 million, $3 million. It would have cost them $300 million. So they buy out and they shut it down. Mm. So if there's any clever people listening, now is the time to get, what's the word? No sellout. Who said that? They killed him. The Black Panthers. They killed him. I tweet Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah, I know.
Up your security.
Yeah.
Up your security. These people want you dead. They want you dead. Bernie Saunders, I hope, wins.
Yeah.
So many people don't.
Yeah.
Let's not get political. But the real point is, if you're the king of the castle, you ain't going to get out of there, Mr. Trump. You love it. You love kicking ass. You're going to start a war somewhere. You're going to do anything you can. Millions of people die because of insane people like you. Millions of people lose their jobs, lose their income because of clever little fuckers, you know. Well, it's about time these clever little fuckers started to think this is like not all about you getting rich. my hero, Elon Musk, is going to be richer than every single one of you. And he's going to bring free high network internet to Africa. He's bringing the railway, you know, like they did in America, without using the Chinese to lay down the lines. Mm. He is going to revolutionize the world with SpaceX and tunnels. And I mean, the man is doing good, and putting his own money there. He doesn't have to go to these people. Mm. All these people are trying to give him money. Hey, can we invest? I don't need your money. Yeah, but you're doing a $100 billion scheme. Yeah, but I did my sums. The guy is an absolute genius. And I went to San Francisco, and I went there. I've created an app that's going to be happening soon at some point to monetize musicians.
Great.
And I got in a taxi, and I said to the guy, is this a electric? He said, no. I said, but you're in San Francisco. Yeah. He goes, I can't afford an electric car. I said, wait a minute. How long do you think you're going to be driving this cab? He goes, 5 years. I said, how many other cab drivers have you asked that question to? And 20 years later, they're still driving that cab. Because driving a cab is quite easy money. And you can earn 100, 200 a day. And you can live in America on that kind of income. Okay. But it's an 8-hour, 10-hour day. You know, it's a hard graft. Okay. I said, if you bought a Tesla on finance over 5 years and you worked out how much fuel you're not going to use, right? And I said, just do your sums, mate. Just do your sums. And you've never heard of Elon Musk. Really? I couldn't believe it. And then I was in Laurel Canyon, you know where that is, like rock and roll LA land, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a shop, there's a store, a store that everybody goes to before they go home to their mansions. And in there, they got pictures of Jim Morrison and, you know, the whole caboodle. And I went into the store and I'm like, Elon Musk is my hero. Who?
Really?
Same thing. And I'm like, but you're young. You're cool people. You're young. You've got Jim Morrison on the wall. You know about music and you know about... No, we don't know who he is.
Interesting. Why do you think they don't know?
Because tech is boring. When I look at Nevada desert and I go, wow, did you know there's someone out there called Blockchains with an S, LLC? They built a city. They built a tech city. These guys are the innovators for our creators. So if you're listening to this show and you're a creator and you can't live, right? And you're being ripped off like I am, like we all are. It's my logo. That's my image, you know? Well, you will be able to protect that.
Good.
That is the point. When you come up with a couple of squiggles on a white piece of paper and you put it through your machine, or you make some chocolates with a different colour and you personalise it, you will be dragging and dropping that into the registration.
Cool.
You will be patenting it and owning it. And then people contact me all the time. They literally want me, yeah, but you're going to get exposure. That brilliant word that none of us can eat. And I'm like, not interested. Oh, he must have done really well. Well, you know why I'm so vocal? Do you know why I'm so vocal?
Tell me.
Every single thing I ever had and made in the music industry was stolen from me. Mm. Robbed. I don't get paid. I don't get royalties for Visage. I don't get royalties for Madonna. I don't get royalties for Afrika Bambaataa. I never got royalties. I never got paid. I've been emailing, writing, meeting lawyers at $3.50 an hour, emailing, writing. Todd Terry stole my music. So many people ripped me off. So many people pat you on the back and go, yeah, great, thank you. Yeah, you really helped. Yeah, great. So what? U2 paid me for remixing their tunes, which are absolutely beautiful, and I love U2. And they paid me in 1986, 87 for a year. They gave me a salary for a year just to listen to the thousands of tapes that came in. And I found D. Ream.
Really?
Oh. Yeah, Pete Kuna. I found him. But there is a lot of rubbish. There's a lot of rubbish music. So what I do now is I just ignore it. Back in the day, I used to try to... give constructive criticism. The hardest thing in the world. It's like an X Factor wannabe and you're telling them, you know, you haven't got it. You know, well, why do you need to be Simon Cowell and upset them? Mm-hmm. So he does that because it's for his TV show ratings. But what I do now is I tweet Simon Cowell because I have basically either been involved with, promoted, discovered as in bedroom case, played the first ever recording of probably 100 artists. And you'll go, what? And then I tweet William Orbit and he'll go, yeah, thanks, Rusty. That was, you were amazing. And I can go on and on and on. And last couple of days I was tweeting, do you remember You're Unbelievable?
EMF, yeah, I know Ian Dench very well.
They were called Apple Mosaic and I took them in the studio and played all the drum machines and said, get a fucking DJ in the band, forget all that raincoat crap and, you know, miserable crap and, you know.
I was with Ian Dench last night.
Ian Dench, well, there you go.
I was with him last night.
How about it? What a small world.
Yeah,
it's a great I went to the Forest of Dean and I did One of These Days. You know that track?
Yeah, One of These Days, yeah.
Yeah, One of These Days.
Yeah.
No, and I did it all without them. They just sat there and watched me doing it. And I said, get a drum machine. Because they were managed by Hugh Gadsden.
Right, yeah.
About that? I found Seal. Took Seal to and Adamski. I took them to... this is all 1990 when I was finished. I was worn out. I was finished by 1990. Mm.
Tell us about Madonna.
What?
Tell us about Madonna.
Oh, well, Madonna wasn't anything like me walking into a bar and discovering Madonna. No. By 1983, I had the biggest club in London, which is now called Coco.
Oh, right. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, well, that was an old disco. They made a movie called The Music Machine. Right. And they made a shitty English version of Studio 54.
Yeah.
Really bad with dancers, you know. And it burnt down like all nightclubs do. And then the owners came to me and Steve Strange and we're going to open this club. And I said, come to New York. You've got to see clubs in New York. Go to Paris. There's a club called the Palace, you know. And turn these old blokes, they're only like 40 at the time, you know, turn them on to how a club should be. They came back and said, we've got £1 million. You can build it. What do you want? And I said, I want this sound system, I want that, you know. And they brought in this architect and a designer. So anyway, the point was I go to New York, I go to the New Music Seminar, and the DJs, I meet them all, and I meet this guy called Mark Kamens, who says, hey, I'm DJing at Danceteria. And I'm like, that's the coolest place in town. I've got to come. He goes, you're on the list, you know. And in those days, you went and you're English and you're on the list and they gave you like 10 drink tickets. You were like, what? And you were VIP'd because you were this English guy. It was, I don't know, it was like... Anyway, the bottom line was, wow, I'm loving this. And suddenly Heidi, the super blonde, is your best friend drinking up all your drink tickets. And he's playing all the records that I'm playing at the same time, you know, including Visage. It's been out, it's been a hit, and Gary Newman and Ultravox, and they played all that in these clubs. Then they have another floor, and don't forget hip-hop didn't exist, so they'd have another floor and it would be like soul and R&B, you know. But some of the tracks from one floor would get played on the other floor. He said to me, my girlfriend has written a song and I'm demoing it. Her name's Madonna. When it's ready, can I send it to you? And I said, yeah, of course you can, man. I want to hear it. He said, oh, yeah, but I'm going to get in the studio. Don't forget, he hadn't been in the studio. He's just a DJ. We don't go in studios. People produce records. So the bottom line is, I get a phone call back in those days. Are you coming to the New Music Seminar in August with Tommy Boy Records and all those guys? And I'm like, yeah, of course I am. I love it. And I've got a friend who's got an apartment on Thompson and Bleecker where I bought 99 records. Do 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 bass. Anyway, the point was I was a record buying guy, you know, and followed every tune, every producer, because you do, you're a DJ. And I got to get a first copy of this record. And Sire, Seymour Stein was my friend already, and I'd done a deal with Soft Cell. I'd found Soft Cell, and I'd done a deal with him. And later on, I sold him B Movie, Nowhere Girl, and I sold him all these English bands. And he met up with me and said, so what do you think? What do you think? And I go, it's a great tune, but I'd like to remix it. And I think you probably have a better chance of getting somewhere in England. He goes, so you want to put her on at the club? And I go, yeah, of course I do. Of course I do. She's great. And he goes, oh, great. Well, let's arrange a date. So I haven't even met her. The tape arrives. I go in the studio with it. And I do a sort of a cappella, loads of delays, all electronic, you know. Love the guitar, the plucking guitar. So basically I did a couple of mixes and I submitted it to them. And I'm sure somewhere along the line it was like, this guy is Rusty Egan. This guy is the DJ in the number one club, the Camden Palace. What he says goes. And if you go with it, we'll send out promo copies. And every other DJ in the country will go with it. So I think Madonna didn't like it at all. She didn't, but it was her first record. And she didn't really have the balls to say, I don't want it, right? Mm-hmm. So the point was, I wish she just told me. I would have said, what's wrong with it? I'll go back in the studio. What don't you like about it? I love it. I'm playing it in the Camden Palace, mm-hmm. right? It's going down a storm, this record that I've made. And I'm telling everyone, oh, this girl's coming over, you've got to see her, she's great. And I've got all the photographs, I'm on the phone call to Mark Kamens. I haven't even met her. I've made the record, but he's telling me everything about her. And last night we went here and she played here and we did, you know how you do. Yeah. So I'm all bigged up on it. And I tell Terry Hollingsworth at WEA, I can get you on Factory as well, you know, in Manchester. Nice. She's coming over, you might as well do a few clubs, you know. Mm. And back in those days, that's what you did. You played the backing track, you went around all the clubs, a pack full of people dancing to Depeche Mode and whatever, and you came on and did your track, you know. Didn't have to have a band or anything. So the bottom line is, opening, I get her at the Camden Palace, there's 1,500 people there. I PR'd it really well. I've got all the coolest people in town, Boy George and everybody like that, all the 80s people. And George Michael, and I think she did three tracks, but they're all 12 inches, you know, like the whole thing, you know. You can dance, come on, everybody. And she had a couple of Hispanic boys doing the dancing with her. It's all very 80s fishnet type of spandex or whatever she was wearing. But the point was, she didn't like my record, and they didn't release it. They released her record, but they didn't release mine. And the other day I got a tweet. It's in an auction starting at 500 quid for a copy of it.
Really?
On vinyl. Yeah. And the auctioneers contacted me, like, would I sign it type thing. I'm probably worth more signing crap than I am making music, you know. So yeah, that's a long way around telling you that I made this record with Madonna without actually meeting her. But because she did play Camden Palace, she came back and did it again. All the press wrote about this girl. Her next record was a hit, as were everybody I booked at the Camden Palace, including Frank Go to Hollywood, before they recorded Relax, Eurythmics, Yellow, Curiosity Killed a Cat, Kaja Goo Goo. I mean, everybody wanted to play there, but I was the one that said yes or no. Normally, I just heard a record, contacted you and said, I'd love you to play at my club, and presented another artist. I'm not sure, but I did actually like the first record of a hell of a lot of people that went on to make a load of crap. So I'm not like a Midas touch, you know. What artist have you loved that now you're like, oh no, like Coldplay, right? Everybody go, oh, I love Coldplay, first three albums, oh, amazing. And then you go, oh, yeah. What happened to Coldplay?
That's mainstream success does that, don't I think. Yeah. So how did the music industry differ from your expectations when you were young? So when you were growing up, How did it differ from the reality? How is the music industry different?
When you're young, I absolutely love young people. I love their enthusiasm. I love, and I go to those colleges and I tell students that right now, this is the best time and the best thing you'll ever produce in your whole life is before you're 30.
Yeah.
Right? This is it. You don't need anything but like 200 quid a week. If you have 200 quid a week, that's it. You don't need anything. You don't need a house. You don't need a mortgage. You don't need a car. You don't need anything. You just need a credit card. It's got no limit, right? But you have to live within, right? And now just focus on what you do. Now, the music business, I absolutely hate when... Let me give you my experience in the music business. I was a drummer in my living room in the afternoons when there was no one there, banging away on the drums, headphones on, plugged into a virtuoso drummer, like Bill Bruford or Jacques Dijonet or, Stanley Clark and Miroslav Vitus and Weather Report. So I was learning how to really play the drums. I went to the National Youth Jazz Orchestra, I was reading how to play drums, reading drum music, you know. Anyway, my enthusiasm for drums was like a kid looking in a shop window. I was like, I gotta have that kit. I'm a Gretsch man. I'm a wood finish. I'm a, I'm a Ludwig snare. I'm a Ludwig Speed King pedal. I was just in love with everything to do with drums. But you have to smack me around the head and say, hey, man, go and deliver that parcel. Because that's what I had to do. Ugh. So I deliver all the parcels. But I passed my driving test at 17. So I got a car that I could put my drum kit in. Okay, so now I've got two drum kits. One that makes me money playing in the pubs and the clubs on the weekend, and one that I take to the people that I want to play with.
Yeah.
So you talked about the music business. This enthusiastic kid that was playing at night, was delivering parcels during the day, down the road in the same street was Mark Wallace. If you Google him, he was a sound engineer on Unforgettable Fire. Okay. But he was a sound engineer learning, 19 years old, at DJM Studios, Dick James Music. Dick James Music was at 69 New Oxford Street. And next door was WEA Records, Warner Electro Atlantic. So he said, I'll get you a job in a post room. So my attitude was, I'm going to make music. I'm going to be in a band. And I'm in the post room delivering for you.
Mm.
But this is not my career. The people that worked in the rental company were like, oi, if you want to get to where I am today, mate, you'll bloody do what I'm telling you. Now, you take that parcel, forget your lunch break, you know. And I'm like, I'll get you, you bastard. I'm going to get you, you know. So the bottom line was, WEA was a part of Warner. So the rich kid signed to Warner Music, Glenn Matlock.
Nice.
And I was at that meet. I didn't sign because I wasn't writing Rich Kids songs. I was just the drummer in the Rich Kids. Literally, 18 months after I left, punk blew up. I was banging drums with a Clash in rehearsals before they made a record, just going through half a dozen drummers. And then I met Glenn Matlock and got the Rich Kids together with Steve New. So my experience was... guys in the music business that were like Smashy and Nicey, you know, hey, I've got a Wings tour satin jacket and I've got VIP passes on my briefcase, nothing in the briefcase, you know, just, you know, glasses and gloves, kind of petrol head type guys, you know, I've just been on the road, man. Yeah. I mean, just every cliche ever.
Yeah.
Cuban heel, cowboy boots, flares. Sideburns, hairy chest, doing coke. I hated them, all those people in the music business. A couple of really nice guys were lovely to me. And Rob Dickens was great to me. I started my first company with Rob Dickens, who was, if you listen to the record Orinoco Flow, he's credited in the lyrical content. And he was a real major A&R man too. He signed everybody in music publishing, including Bill Drummond.
Right.
Yeah, he signed Deaf School. When from Liverpool, He signed, like, just signed everyone. He was great. And with me, we got Soft Cell, Yellow, Johnny H. Jazz, Visage. I mean, dozens of others. Bill Laswell. I signed Bill Laswell. You ever heard of him?
Not me personally.
Yeah, he wrote 50% of I Could Be Wrong, I Could Be Raped, I Could Be Black, I Could Be White. Okay. He's an amazing jazz musician from New York, an experimental guy. Material. He had a band called Material. And then I met Nona Hendrix and I made a record with Nona Hendrix. So basically, I am on this podcast to people who probably never heard of Rusty Egan. And I am associated in some way or other to probably, like I told you, 100 records that you all know. Mm. Even if it was like I gave that DJ his first job and now he's a major DJ. You know, you can say that. Oh, I worked in a pub in Shoreditch and I gave that guy a job, you know.
Well, this podcast exists to give recognition to people who don't get the recognition, perhaps, that they deserve. And that's why we wanted. That's why we wanted you to come.
But Visage was for people that didn't want people to know who they were. Yeah. That was the point. Yeah. And I hate fame. And I hate people who want to be famous. And I hate 99% of the music in the charts. And I argue all the time with my own son, who I adore and is amazingly talented. And he does drum and bass, and I go, name me a hit artist. They don't exist. It's just people having a good time. You're having a good time. Well, sometimes you have to say, well, I need to make some music. I need to discover an artist. Mm. And I can discover an 18-year-old. And then I go, but I'm not prepared to go onto national television and make a twat of myself while some bloke comes and does a magic trick for me. Mm. I'm not here for magic, mate. Mm. I'm not here for your singing dog. I'm here to find Madonna. Mm. I thought that this was a talent show. Yeah, but my 7-year-old kid has got multiple sclerosis and she's going to sing now. How do you feel about that? And I'm like, I shouldn't be here. Goodbye. You know.
But that's not the music industry.
That's like, not. Well, it is. It's ruined by that. Let's put it like this. If the music industry...
It's TV entertainment. It's crap.
The music industry in the 80s had to remove compilation albums from the charts. So they created a compilation albums chart. Am I right?
Yeah.
Because now Music 27 was always number one. And you couldn't get Oasis to number one because of Now Music 27. So they said, well, why don't we just move all this compilation crap out of the charts and call it the album chart? Right. Now, who's got the number one album? An artist. Not Now Music. Not I Can't Believe It's Not Buttercrap, whatever they're called. So why don't they remove talent show crap from the radio playstations? Do not play it.
Yeah.
Do not play this shit. I don't care. It's not, you've ruined the music business. Mm. Amazing artists out there who can't get heard because some girl with multiple sclerosis, I'm very sad to say, we've got hundreds of people suffering from disease every day. We've got brilliant charities and everybody does everything they can for charity. Mm. Brilliant. Why use that on national television for somebody who's going to sing a song and we're all going to go, oh, and give it a million stats and then it's going to go to number one for Christmas? When I'd rather John Lennon number one for Christmas. Mm. I'd rather James Blake number one for Christmas. I'd rather Ryan Vale, who's on TV this week with the Irish BBC, have covered Ryan Vale. His first ever gig in London. I was there. His first ever album. These are people that need to be supported exposed now. And he could make four albums and disappear. Ah, but they used one of his songs in Stranger Things, and now everyone knows who he is. Well, sorry, we're paying Chris Evans £1.8 million a year to be a radio DJ. Why? That is, why? I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I told you Grimes posted a picture of a selfie girl with big tits and a trout mouth. 2 million followers. And a ballet dancer who nearly killed herself to get into the ballet. 1,000 followers. Spent her whole life practicing day in and day out to be the best ballet dancer in the world. But some trout mouth bimbo. Yeah, well, I'm dating Calvin Harris now. And that's why I've got 82.5 million followers, and they love my new makeup range, which I've got nothing to do with. They just signed my name as a brand. What is wrong with people? What is wrong with people that, oh, just makes me sick that people devote their time to doing something that is uniquely them. Your USP, your unique selling point is that only I can do this. Only I can make this, draw this, produce this, write this, perform this. Only I can do that. Anyone can have a tit job, boot job, lip job and shag a footballer and they get a deal. Go on a reality TV show. I hate it. There's so much amazing stuff out there, you know? And I feel sad for millennials, you know? I feel sad for them that they have to dig under this pile of relentless crap that they're being hit at. I think somebody in the advertising industry actually said that we are being abused. We leave our house and there's an advert on a bus. There's adverts on the underground. There's people telling us what to eat, what to drink, what to go. You know, log on, do this, do that, download this, do that, do this, do that. And it's just rubbish. It's just rubbish. We log on to our social media. We're inundated with algorithm crap. You go, hide this advert. I don't want this. We download ad block. We don't want it. We add, oh, you're using ad block. We don't want it. I don't want to hear that crap on the radio. I don't want to hear Chris Evans. I don't care about what you did on the way to work. You have nothing. You contribute zero. Oh, he makes me feel really good when I get up at 5 a.m. and I have to go to work. Ah, so you tune into the Screaming Breakfast Show, dude, to brighten up your day. So basically, Screaming Breakfast Show, dude, is the Sun newspaper in your ears. Yeah. It tells me about football and what was on the telly last night. And I'm like, I'll give up.
What needs to change?
What does he say?
No. What needs to change?
People need to turn everything off. The next generation need to no longer be a consumer and they need to own their data. You've seen the data. We all know our data. We need to all be in that blockchain. And you need to say, hey, tick the box. I'm interested in football. I'm interested in movies. What type of movies? What type of football? What team? What, you know, Division 3, 3rd Division, 4th Division. I'm interested in the arts. I'm interested, yeah. So great. You honestly have told us what you are interested in. So would you like to know about Paul Oakenfold's coming to the... No, I want to know about 18-year-old DJ, not a 50-year-old DJ. But I'm 50 years old. I want to know about 50-year-old DJ. But don't you want to know about 18? Nah, I don't like any new music. Oh, God, you don't want any new music. You don't want anything to... You haven't heard of David August? No. Right, so you're all closed down. Just like your dad still listening to Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon. No one's ever made another album. He didn't know about the KLF. You know, he doesn't know about Chemical Brothers. He doesn't know. No, he doesn't know. Yeah, he loves his Pink Floyd. Dad Rock. Oh, Oasis. There's never been another band like him or since them. Yes, there has. You just never heard it. You know. That's it, really.
I had been running on empty for half of my life. I thought I had nothing left in me 21 years ago. But I just keep moving with hope, courage, and no fear in my heart. Is there another 21 years? Am I only halfway through? Can I enjoy and linger each passing sunset and wish there was...
If you go to my band camp, there's about 60 pieces of music with me associated to it. I made an album on vinyl called Welcome to the Dance Floor.
I listened to it. It's good.
Thank you.
Peter Hook's on it, right?
Peter Hook on bass.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was remixed by Youth.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, Youth's a legend.
It's unbelievable, mate.
Yeah, it's a great tune.
Yeah, and that's on vinyl. And you can get all that on... All my music is out there with love. And everybody loves... Well, everybody loves... Everybody that listens to my music, that contacts me, tells me how much they love my music. That is the inspiration. How do I earn a living? There's no money in music.
No.
There's nothing. How do I earn a living? I secretly am available for your wedding. And I will play whatever crap you want at your wedding. Mm. In the best possible way. And finish with everybody hugging each other, singing Angels, if they're in that age group.
Yeah.
Yeah? I will finish with the song where everybody, the best time they ever had, Oasis, you know, whatever they are, whatever age group they are, because weddings tend to be that age group now. Yeah. Yeah. But that's it. You need to do what they want. Are you prepared to do that crap? And I go, yeah, well, then why don't you do Breakfast TV and get 1.8 million? Like, no. I do... 20 gigs a year. I'm not on 4 a.m. wake up alarm call to talk rubbish. No thanks. Yeah, but why don't you work in a nightclub every night a week? No thanks. Yeah, well then why are you complaining that you don't have any money? Because 1.3 million people just listened to my record and I got paid nothing. Millions of people have bought my albums over the years. I'm the drummer on a theme tune at the Top of the Pops. I've discovered Depeche Mode, Soft Cell. I've signed everybody. I had everything stolen off me. And I want everyone to know the music industry, like Apple, they do not care about music. They care about money. Nobody cares about James Blake's new album. Nobody cares about James Blunt makes you cry. Nobody cares that Kraftwerk are innovators and pioneers. They care about stats, money. That's all that people care about. And if you don't need money like that student, what do you need? 200 quid a week? Well, I put myself back in that position. I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't drive. Now I'm over 60, I've got a free bus pass. Well, I'll buy a bottle of water for 3 quid. No, I won't. I won't even spend money on a bottle of water. Oh, come on, Rusty, you've got to go. I don't go to Pret a Manger and buy overpriced coffees for £3.50. Are you joking? I don't throw my money away. I live in the real world where people go to the Tesco or Sainsbury's and go, oh, it's bread's gone up by 25p. And like, that's a lot of money. And it goes off after 2 days and you've got to cling film it and you've got to put it in the fridge. And I like real things. I'm a big supporter in America. I hate America. I hate the right-wing America. And can't wait for Birdie. I can't wait for people to just say, we've got the national health and Trump wants to get his hands on it. And he wants to sell us the worst chicken in the world. And we're all going to eat the crap. I don't eat fast food. I've never eaten McDonald's. I've never had a KFC. Stay away from all this rubbish. You put rubbish into your body. You put fat into your body. You put disgusting crap into your head. You listen to crap music like Ed Sheeran. Manufactured crap. That rubbish. I don't care that millions of people are loving it because millions of people buy the bloody Sun. Rubbish.
You talk about how you've been ripped off in the past and not making money and you should have made money. Do you think you'll ever get at peace with that? Is there a way that you can become at peace with the fact?
At peace?
Yeah.
Well, no. I'm not doing this rant because I'm an angry person that doesn't enjoy his life. I'm on a podcast that will touch somebody. George Michael wrote Careless Whisper. He spent his life trying to get out of that deal. Prince had slave written on his face. Couldn't get out of that deal. Mm. Go into Sly Stone, lived in a car for 20 years. Spinal Tap got paid after 40 years. I'm trying to tell everybody. I'm not ranting. I'm trying to tell you that if I found Madonna, if I found Depeche Mode, if I found Soft Cell, if I didn't sign them to a contract, well, how can you have been ripped off, Rusty? You didn't sign them to a contract. Okay. But I mixed the record and we agreed that they pay me. Well, then you have to get a lawyer. Okay, well, I got a lawyer and he wrote to Warner Chappell and they ignore you. They ignore you. And then when the lawyer gets heavy, they go, hey, John, how many deals have we done? Who are we dealing with right now? You're representing Robbie Williams, is that right? Yeah, I represent Robbie Williams and like 50 other artists. How about just forget that arsehole? Just forget him. He's pissing in the wind. He hasn't got a chance in hell. And he goes, all right, I'll string him along for a few years. That lawyer is not your friend. That lawyer is a friend of the money. The man who pays the money is Robbie Williams. Why is Robbie Williams? Because he's got the deal. Who's he got to deal with? Don't bite the hand that feeds. Lucian Grange, Universal Music Group, they're making all the money. They're making $20 million a day. Google it. Why would any lawyer want to represent some musicians? The musicians are the least important people. The copyright owner. And that's why I'm doing this rant. I'm telling you, there's a company called AUDOO who don't want me to talk about them. When you go to a pub or a shop or a club, anywhere, they have to pay a PPL license, a public performance license. Well, the public performance license have joined up with the PRS. The PRS and the PPL now collect all the money from 400,000 public places. What do we do with it? Well, everybody sings Happy Birthday. Who owns Happy Birthday? Oh, look, Warner Chappell Music own it for 100 years. Really? Yeah, and they were singing that in 400,000 places, so we better give them 400,000 times. Well, they sing it a lot. In a year, yeah, well, 40 weeks. All right, average. All right, blah, 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 blah. All right, what else? Every Breath You Take by Sting. It's really popular. Look at the stat. All right, give it to Sting. Technology is here. It's called Shazam. We know what songs you were playing in all of those places because we track them. Mm. That's what that company does. And they can now
advertise with the stuff you like to as well.
Give it to the musician who actually wrote the song. Instead of the same people getting the same money. So what I'm trying to tell everybody is, this is 2020. Is it not 1980 when my synthesizer wouldn't talk to another synthesizer? We didn't have MIDI and couldn't even play in time, which is what we started this interview with. Mm. Right now, if you are 18 and you can write a song, you possibly have something that could provide you and your children with a lifetime of income. Because in 1980, we didn't have any Chinese people around, did we? Because they were behind the Iron Curtain. We didn't have any Russians because they were behind the Iron Curtain. We didn't have half of the Eastern European countries because they were behind the Iron Curtain. What are you talking about, Rusty? They now all listen to your music. 88 million people, 100 million people. Look at the stats. Look how many people are listening to streaming music. 250 million people are paying Spotify every week a fee to listen to music. YouTube are now advertising. Every bloody 3 minutes, some bloody advert pops up.
Yeah.
But if you pay us, you behold it. I want to listen to a group. I've got a video. Yeah, we don't pay them. You pay us. And the advertising people pay us. Oh, right. So nobody actually pays the creator. Mm. No. What about a movie? If you want to watch a movie, well, all the actors got paid a fee. Oh, they don't get a residual. No, you don't get them anymore. They don't get repeats. Well, they do when it's on Netflix. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They get, you know what I mean? The deal's changed. So why am I here today? Buy my record? Are you joking? No. Why am I here today? I'm here today to wake everybody up because we are woke now, aren't we? And all of these political people are so upset. Why is Julian Assange in prison? He woke everybody up. Why You know, why did these people get treated? They woke people up and they are the scapegoats, the whistleblowers. I'm just another whistleblower against the music industry. And all I do is go, I didn't get paid for Madonna. Now, you've got to say to yourself, well, I go to work, or I went to university and I've got a job. Is it a job? No, it's a, well, actually, I invoice it. Oh, you invoice them? Yeah. So you're self-employed and you pay PAYE, right? You paid self-employed tax. That's right. Have you got insurance? Why? Well, you need insurance. When you go into a WeWork building and you fell down the stairs with a hot cup of coffee, are you insured? Because they are. Are you? This is all about you waking up to what you have got to offer.
So, final question. This is the final question. A young musician listening to this who is 20, about to go into the music industry and doesn't know about the business, where can they learn so that they don't get
ripped off? Just ask the one question. How will blockchain revolutionize music? Blockchain is going to revolutionize everything. And one more thing for that one musician. Artificial intelligence is going to remove you. Your unique point. Artificial intelligence is going to work out your chord structures, your diminished and minors and sevenths. It's going to work out the choruses and why Ace of Base was such a popular record. It's going to work out what bass line, like do, 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 is on every record I ever hear is Show Me Love, repeated and repeated and repeated with a different top line. They just work out the most popular crap. They get the skinny 19-year-old that wanna be famous that actually has got something like Taylor Swift. And if you watch the documentary about Taylor Swift, which is on Netflix right now, the machine that is making money, she's got to the age of 30, Scooter owns her ass. Scooter, her manager, owns everything. She owns nothing. She's 30 years old, been running around the world singing songs she didn't write. And bye-bye, bye-bye Taylor, because we've got another one on the conveyor belt of crap music today. Oh, but Taylor writes all her own songs. I know. How bad are they? They get rearranged and produced by that lovely guy called the Nodding Dog. Oh, you went up, you went down, you went left, you went right. Oh, you know, what a wonderful song. You're so amazing. No, you're not. You're just part of the machine that makes crap. And hopefully people that listen to this podcast know that you're also the target market. And you don't have to be, because you can right-click, hide. You can say what you don't want. You can download ad block. You can say, I'm not interested. Imagine you click on something, you go to it, and it comes up and says, you're using ad block. If you want to watch this, don't unblock us. Nah, forget it. Now, you're saying, oh, but they need the advertising revenue. Sorry, they're a newspaper. They're a newspaper. The Washington Post needs the advertising revenue. Newspapers should all be online and they should all be free. They shouldn't be unavailable to us. That's where the advert is. You agree that when you're on the site, like anyone else, hi, I like this site. What about you? I'm on your podcast, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You might say something and thank you to Apple for sponsoring my show. But I'm saying the world is changing. And they don't want it to change. They hang on to what they've got as long as they can. And the musician, for the last 10 years, has got nothing out of it. No. Nothing. Except trainers. They'll give you some trainers and makeup and some clothes and maybe a little bit of expenses. For, oh yeah, my track blew up and 20 million people love it. Yeah, and I got a deal with a trainer company. I have to wear their yellow trainers now and tell everybody.
It's changed.
It's changed a lot. We're going to have to wrap up. Thank you so much for appearing on the Stage Left podcast, Rusty. You know, I agree with some of what you said there, and we need transformational action. We need to change things so that the artist is getting paid at the end of the day. Thanks for your wisdom and insight, and thanks for being such a great guest on the Stage Left podcast.
Is that what you expected you were going to get from me?
Exactly what I expected after I spoke to David, who came to your show. Wowee, so that was Rusty Egan, and what an interesting episode that was. So many big questions that came out of that for me, which I'm going to come on to in a moment. You know, upon reflection, I'd wondered more what I could have done to challenge some of the ideas mentioned. I agreed with some of what he said. There were some ideas that I would have liked to have dug under the surface a bit more, which I normally do. Unfortunately, in this case, there were a couple of barriers for us to actually do that, and I was assessing that as the interview was going on and how successful that would have been in the time frame that we had, but it did leave me with these questions. So and I'd be interested to see what your questions are. So my ones were, you know, what can the industry do to change? And, you know, Rusty comes up with some very concrete ideas there, which is, you know, giving hope to a lot of people, I think. Can the industry change? Big question. Can the industry change? What motivation is there for those in the industry to change if their motivation is purely money? So what can we do to enable that change in that change in thinking? How can people be held to account? Because it's not cool for people to have the experience that Rusty has had and then to come out the other end and be in the position he is in, that you heard kind of in the clip at the beginning and throughout the podcast, where he's angry and he has every right to be angry. And he wants to enable change, and he's got some ideas there. What is our definition of discovering an artist? That was a big question for me that was kind of constantly ringing through the interview. And if you do find an artist or discover an artist or put them on your club night at an early part of their career and they then go on to huge success, what credit or recognition should that person get, either financially or non-financially? What support is in place within the industry, and even from an aftercare point of view as well? So many questions. Do get on our Facebook page, and we'll have a discussion on there. You know, we've got the Twitter account, so Twitter, you know, look on Twitter for the Stage Left podcast, facebook.com/StageLeftPodcast. We've got our Instagram page as well. Drop us an email if you want. So Simo, which is simo.cs@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. Our next episode is with Alex Reeves, who's just had a number one record with Elbow, and Woody from Bastille, who's going to be coming on in the next couple of weeks as well. It'd be interesting to kind of compare and contrast their current experiences in the music industry. And, you know, they may well be in, you know, the future, we hope not, in the shoes that Rusty finds himself in now, and have the same kind of approach to the music industry or perspective on the music industry in retrospect. So it's a really interesting dynamic to see the differences and where people are on their journey within music at the different stages in their life, which is why we're doing this podcast essentially. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.